When you watch a game on TV, maybe it's football from this past Sunday, or maybe it's a basketball game, are you thinking a lot more about players' salaries instead of their statistics?
I think as a mom, I actually think about them as the athletes as human beings. Like they might be playing a great game. They're really well known for their offense or their defense, and just watching them grow as a player. But as a mom, I sit back and I think, boy, many of these people have come into a lot of money in professional sports. And who is helping guide them and helping them figure out like how to be responsible with their own personal finances, their personal lifestyle as it relates to them being such big public figures? Is that kind of what you mean?
I was actually thinking about fantasy sports because of salary caps and everything, but you know what? That's a really good point though. Players need to look after themselves because this is a big business, sports, whether it's in the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball. When it's time for negotiations between players and the owners, it's probably the least favorite times to be a fan, not knowing if there's going to be a work stoppage or a strike. But there's so much more to think about, just the salary. Mental health is so big in sports right now, with the players taking time out to look after themselves. You have to think about their name, image, and likeness now for college players. So a big part of that, the players' unions. And we have an interesting connection here at University of Maryland, Baltimore.
We do. We do. We have a woman who graduated from the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law, Tamika Tremaglio. She was a 1995 graduate. She also obtained her MBA down the street at UB, University of Baltimore, at about the same time. She spent 26 years in consulting. She was a managing principal for Deloitte's Greater Washington practice. She left there and she followed that up by leading the National Basketball Players Association, or the NBPA, as its executive director. She served there from January 2022 through November 2023, and she helped the players ink in a new collective bargaining agreement. And now she is the managing partner of her own company, TA Sports Ventures.
So get ready. It's time for the tip-off of the UMB Pulse podcast.
You're listening to the heartbeat of the University of Maryland, Baltimore, the UMB Pulse.
Tamika, welcome to the UMB Pulse. We are so glad to have you here.
Hello, good morning. Thank you very much.
And after a busy holiday weekend, I'm sure we're all spinning our wheels this morning, ready to jump into the new week. So let's start spinning our wheels on the pulse today. Tell us a little bit about your time at the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law and how your experiences shaped your career in law and business.
Yeah, so thank you very much. And thank you for having me. It is such a privilege to be here today. I'm incredibly grateful. So thank you. But coming off of the Thanksgiving holiday, you're exactly right. It's a reminder of how grateful we are. And of course, the University of Maryland Carey Law School is one of the things that I am incredibly grateful for. One, because it really gave me the opportunity to do something that I'd always dreamed about doing. My father said at the age of five, I was going to be a lawyer. And so obviously had to get that done. But then also, so I really love the business side. And, you know, 30 years ago, which I can't believe it's been almost 30 years, there wasn't a thing of people doing a law degree and an MBA together. And so I was one of the first people to sort of take that on. And it was incredibly challenging. But I think the reason that I love the school so much is because they really, truly gave me the opportunity to think outside of the box, the opportunity to do something unique and different. And so
did you have a memorable course or professor at Maryland Carey Law?
Yeah. So thinking back, I had the privilege of having so many people that I really admired. So we had what you called sort of, I remember in elementary school, you had a homeroom, but we had sort of this base class. So I was Section G. I still remember that. And Professor Tanya Banks, who was amazing and really helped me with, you know, sort of that suffering imposter syndrome of, do I belong here? Do I know what I'm doing, et cetera. And so I just loved her. I also had Professor Larry Gibson, who was amazing, our civil procedures professor, who is still here and does so many things with us and does so much with the law school and so much to give back. And so I still have the privilege of being able to work with him. The interesting sort of tidbit is his family is from Southern Maryland, which I did not know at the time that I went to law school, but very, very close family members, and didn't know that then. So everything sort of comes full circle. So I'm grateful.
Small world, small to more, right?
Yes, that's right.
So as you mentioned, you've earned degrees in law and the MBA at University of Baltimore down the street. And now you're managing TA Sports Ventures, which we'll talk about later. But you've built your experience and career in risk management and compliance to start off with. Did you think that specialty was going to lead you into the world of pro sports?
Yeah. So no, I think, that's the big part of this. It's all about the journey, right? No one sort of knows what will get you where you end. But the reality is, I think, my mom would say any road will take you there. And that's precisely true. In this particular instance, I had done a lot of work in the sports business through risk and compliance. So one of my first engagements was with the NFLPA and looking at their overall structure and risk assessment, et cetera, under the leadership of DeMaurice Smith. Then I went on to do work with the NBPA, so the National Basketball Players Association, and that was with a corporate internal investigation back in 2011 time period. And then later went on with the WNBPA to help them with their organizational structure as well as with their collective bargaining agreement. So, while it was all part of what I had the base for doing, having a law background and a business background to assist them in the CBA, it was certainly not what I had anticipated or the direction that I would go in.
Well, growing up, were you a big sports fan?
I always was a big sports fan. And mm-hmm. I appreciate, Dana, that you said fan, because I was a cheerleader. I was never one that was incredibly good in terms of playing basketball or football or any of those things. But I always loved cheering on people and I always loved championing them. And to some extent, that's what I found myself doing even later in life.
Oh, that's fun. And who were you rooting for back then?
Well, it was at that time, it was the Redskins, now the Commanders. So it's a big Commanders fan. It was also the Bullets, now the Wizards. God, I do feel old. It's interesting. I'm like, wow. But it has been, they've always, sort of local in the community and always been a part of that. So I'm grateful to actually still be Commanders and Wizards fans. I now can say that now that I am not the executive director of the National Basketball Players Association, I was always told then that all of the teams, every player, was always my favorite. But now I'm comfortable saying that I grew up a Wizards and a Commanders fan.
That's great. Well, what is one lesson that you can share with our listeners about teamwork or strategy that stands out from your time at the NBPA, as well as working with the WNBA players?
Yeah, so for certain, there is no I in team. Right. Mm-hmm. And, I remember a long time ago saying that I always want to surround myself with people that are smarter than I am, that are greater than I am, that can bring more to the table. And I think to some extent, people are a little insecure with having people around them that can do more or bring other skill sets. And the reality is, I know that's what truly works. So whether it was in my career at Deloitte, where we could bring in economists and we could bring in law enforcement and we could bring in interpreters, it's really critical that we are sort of amongst a diverse team of individuals that makes the whole greater. And so when I think about the lessons, it's one, being true to who you are, authentic in who you are, but also making sure that you are learning continuously from other people that help you all be a lot stronger, and remembering to enjoy the journey. I think I have always been a person that has thought about the next thing. I'm learning later in life that I'm a hyperachiever, and those individuals are people who want to do more, continuously want to do more, want to achieve more. And so as I'm now kind of settling into myself, I think at the age of 54, it took a long time, and I've kind of come comfortable with it. I've learned that it's important that you enjoy every single step of the journey. Because when I was an associate, all I thought about was when I become partner. When I was a partner, all I could think about is when I could become managing partner. When I was working on behalf of the NBPA, all you could think about is how can you lead the NBPA, as opposed to actually being present in that moment and being excited about what you're doing. And I think we often lose sight of that. And it's so important that we enjoy the moment and enjoy the journey.
Speaking of enjoying the moment and the journey, I know the MBPA kind of steals the headlines a little bit in your career trajectory and resume. And you also mentioned the WNBA too. These players really have had their moment in this past year. And with breakout stars like Baltimore's own Angel Reese, and then you have Indiana Fever's Caitlin Clark, you were instrumental in that 2020 CBA. Now fast forward, with that big moment, they're poised to capitalize in their short careers. They're opting out, looking for a better deal to advocate for themselves. So you have to be thrilled for these athletes getting their due publicly, you know, and continuing to raise the bar for other women.
Yes, no, I absolutely am thrilled. And as you mentioned, Charles, in 2020, I was involved with the CBA, and it was the first time ever that we actually instituted an opportunity for the players to get a portion of revenue. So, you know, the men had that for some time, which has obviously led to their tremendous success. The women, this was the very first time. And now we are seeing where that could actually come to fruition. People are excited about them. The arenas are being filled with individuals that want to see them play. I love hearing about them being sold out. It is time. And I am so grateful that they are actually seeing their time. And you're right, it's time to capitalize on it, whether or not it's the players individually, whether or not it's individuals who want to invest in teams. As we see the W expanding, that will be significant as well. So it's grateful to be a part of it, and grateful to certainly be a part of the history of our women.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up with one related point to it, which is the common theme throughout sports. It's very complicated with collective bargaining, right? I'm a huge sports fan. I've had to learn about CBA more than I probably wanted to as an average sports fan in the different leagues. But at the end of the day, these are young men and women in their 20s and 30s, sometimes, you know, early 40s, if they're lucky to extend their careers. And that has to be such a task to give that education to this population and realize how much power they have in their hands and how big of a task they have to solving these really complicated, you know, labor rights deals and workers' rights deals. But I guess that's where you step in and the player agents too, to help kind of explain all the legalese, what impacts them at the end of the day, right?
Yes, no, absolutely. So, you know, the last CBA, of course, with the men was completed in 2023, and we had about 18 months to actually get that done. It's daunting, to your point. It is over 700 pages. It encompasses everything. So from a workload management, if you will, perspective, to the number of hours that they get to sleep, to the, you know, time period in between games. I mean, it covers everything, how they are compensated, which tends to be what people focus on. But a lot of this is about the well-being of the players and how they can offer the most back to the community. The other piece is it's so important that we look at our players as more than just players, right? And for me, that was something that was critically important, because as I thought about how the fans engage with the players, it was important that they recognize that our players had an and. So I would always say to the players, what's your and? Because we have players that are fathers, that are brothers, that are spouses, that are professionals, that, you know, have graduate degrees, et cetera. And all of that makes up the whole person. And because people are so thoughtful about them as athletes, they forget about them as human beings. And the CBA covers a lot of that. So it is beyond just how they're being compensated. While it's a tremendous part of it, it's about, you know, how the league is going to make money, how the agents are engaged. It covers everything from zero to 100.
Wow. A lot that we don't think about just sitting on a Sunday afternoon watching a football game.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Well, Tamika, you've turned your sights into something different now. You're taking a different path, and you're a managing partner at TA Sports Ventures. Tell us what that is and what your mission is there.
Yes. So it's been quite the journey, as you have said. So yes, TA Sports Ventures, which is now our own company, we are really focused on reimagining sports. So as you can imagine, we have spent a lot of time seeing different things. So now we are in a booming sports industry that encompasses sports betting, that encompasses esports, that encompasses NIL for college players, that so name, image, and likeness for our college players. It's now a global sport as well. Even American football is global, you know, outside of the US. And so how are we capturing that there? So I've had the privilege of doing some work in the Middle East and looking at, you know, how we can bring sports there, even Major League Fishing, and how can we bring fishing to other parts of the world? So it has been amazing for me because I've always thought about what can you do outside of the box? How can you reimagine sports now that private equity has become a part of it? Now that there are so many things that are encompassing sports, it really is a great time to capitalize on that. So that's what TA Sports Ventures is doing, is looking at all of the opportunities that exist throughout the world to reimagine the game of sports.
You mentioned the Middle East. I was wondering what excited you about that market and what makes sense there. There has been, as you mentioned, a lot of investment from different funds around the world that are now able to tap into North American sports.
You're absolutely right. And I think what attracts me to the Middle East, it's twofold. One is I had the privilege in serving as executive director that we had our global games in Abu Dhabi, which was honestly my first time to the Middle East. And seeing the excitement throughout the world for our game, seeing the excitement throughout the world for our players, it opened up an entirely new world, and learning about all of the things that they were doing there. And quite frankly, just learning about how sort of underdeveloped they were in terms of sports, even more broadly. So when you look at soccer, when you look at, you know, American football, all of these things is very unique. And they are really excited about it, sort of bringing it into their culture more broadly. So even as they look at wellness, so when you look in Dubai and they have their 2030 vision, a lot of that is about wellness and people getting engaged in activities outside and doing sports. And so understanding how you can be a part of that and to build that in a place where that hasn't been the priority is really exciting to me, because we take it for granted that we have high school competitions and things like that aren't happening on a daily basis in the Middle East. And they really want to be able to be a part of the American culture as well. And I also have found that, you know, oftentimes we do not know or understand enough about the Middle East. And so to the extent that not only are we giving them an opportunity to learn more and to be engaged in our culture, we also have the opportunity to be engaged in their culture. People always say ignorance is bliss to some extent, but at the end of the day, ignorance is just ignorance. And so being able to get out there and getting exposed to other people and other cultures, to me, is significantly, it's a significant opportunity for all of us.
A couple minutes ago, you mentioned seeing players as people, not just as athletes. And you just mentioned wellness. And that brings to mind, you have done some work in the area of mental health challenges that with the athletes that you've worked with. Can you tell us a little bit about how that shaped your advocacy efforts and the changes you've championed for those folks in the industry?
To be honest, a lot of it started well before going to the National Basketball Players Association. So I learned, you know, at Deloitte around sort of bringing your authentic self to work. And so we launched a Business of Kindness campaign, which was, in my way, a way of trying to recognize that we don't know what anyone is going through on any given day and how important it was in the business community to be kind. And so it obviously, going into the National Basketball Players Association, I recognized that one, kindness was critically important, and we didn't always see that of our fans. But I also understood that our men were going through a lot, like the pressure, not only on the court, but off the court. And being part of a union, one of the focus, a part of what we did, which people didn't always appreciate, was that we were involved with them on and off the court, which meant that mental health and the things that they were, you know, being approached with every day were significant to them. And so as a result, we have an entire department that was led by Dr. Parham that really focused on our players' mental health at all stages. So as a rookie and you're coming in to the NBA, as, you know, someone who's close to retirement and how you transition, you know, we really spent a lot of time with them making sure that they were well, because they could only be their best selves on the court when other things were going well too. And I think people forget about, you know, all of the things that kind of keep us back from things. So physically, you know, they are the greatest athletes in the world, but we can only bring the best of ourselves physically when mentally we are in a great place. And so we had our first ever mental health symposium back in September of 2024, actually. And that was critically important because it brought something to the table that people had really not talked about. And the players are such tremendous examples to everyone, whether it's young men in school, whether it's young women, and they want to hear that it's okay to not be okay. And our players were talking about that. And I think it's so critically important. You know, a lot of that I learned through working with Lady Gaga and the Born This Way Foundation, where they really focus on mental health and being brave and talking about these things. So it was a natural progression to be able to do that at the MBPA. And it's one of the things that I'm most proud of, but it's also one of the things that I will carry with me is recognizing, you know, all of the struggles that many of our players were going through and how we could really be helpful to them.
Great. And a huge Lady Gaga fan here. So
yeah, she does so much in the community, really does. I'm grateful that people are, you know, recognize her in that way.
Yeah. And I think, is it her mom? That's a big part of that.
Yes. So Cynthia Germanotto, who is her mother, she and Lady Gaga founded Born This Way Foundation. And so with that, they focus on, you know, mental health, particularly mental health in the youth population, which has just been tremendous. I'm just delighted to be able to be a part of it. It's a privilege to watch, but I've certainly learned so much from that responsibility as well.
That's great. Well, it sounds like with everything you have going on, you're definitely a leader who knows not just who you are, but how to excel and accomplish the things you want to in all of these different parts of your life. How would you describe your approach to leadership? And what advice would you give our alumni or any other listeners?
I mentioned, obviously, enjoying the journey. I also appreciate that bringing, you know, diverse skill sets and thinking is critically important. I am absolutely a collaborative leader that I do want to hear from other people. I never go into something thinking that I know it all. I think it's important that we recognize, you know, our strengths, certainly, but recognize, you know, where we have weaknesses and others can help to fill those gaps. I just think that is so critically important, and it is not seen as a weakness. I also think being an authentic leader, you know, then people feel like they can come to you and talk to you, that they can express concerns, that they can feel free to voice their opinions about things. It's so important that we do that. And then lastly, I will always say that I always want to be transformational. I always want to think outside of the box. I want to bring new ideas. You know, there are lots of people that can execute on things that have been given. It's those unique leaders that can execute on things that are just thoughts, you know, or visions that they can bring to life.
With being an authentic leader, I love that mode of thought and mode of leadership because it's really can be disarming for people and make them feel more at ease and relaxed. I was wondering if you can share maybe one way you do that. Being an authentic leader.
Yeah, so for sure, I think COVID helped us all to do that, right? Because now you're in people's homes, you can see their family, their kids, there's interruptions. And so that for certain does that. I think also sort of showing where you're vulnerable, right? I often talk about the imposter syndrome and even, you know, being chairman of the board at the University of Maryland Carey Law School, I've talked to our students about the imposter syndrome and how I have felt like an imposter. Not to suggest that, you know, I am less than, because I think Harvard Business Review talks so often about, you know, women stop saying that, you know, you have the imposter syndrome, because there are times that we are made to feel less than, and we have to recognize that, you know, I think they call it gaslighting, right? But at the same time, I think it's appropriate to tell people that, you know, your heart's palpitating because you're wondering if you are enough, if you're wondering if you're doing the right thing, if you're wondering if someone thinks that you're smart enough or, you know, belong in this room, et cetera. And I think when you do that and you can allow yourself to be vulnerable, people open up to you. I wrote a letter to my younger self right before I became the managing partner of Deloitte, and I was convinced that then there was no way they were going to choose me for that role. But the reality, it was just the opposite, because people needed to feel like they could relate. And it was so important for people to be able to relate to leaders. We talk about when you can see it, you can be it. And that's what people need now, is they need to see it so that they can be it. They don't need this facade put up and, you know, acting like life is perfect and things go very smoothly, right? They need to know when there are moments of weakness so that they can understand that they're human too, but yet they can still get to those same roles, or they can aspire to do certain things. I think that's so critically important.
You are so right. Everyone has gotten past the type of leader or dealing with that leader at work who says everything is fine, but then you see the flames in the background as they're drinking the coffee at the desk.
Yeah. Right. One of my colleagues used to tell me that they would see me. They're like, I think you're like a duck, like you're in a pond and you're just, you know, floating across and your legs are underneath, like feverishly moving, because that's exactly what life is like. And you got to tell people, like, I'm barely staying afloat here. I'm getting through things. So I think that's so incredibly important. And, you know, I think having gone to University of Maryland, Carey Law, I think we could do that. And now our focus, honestly, has been on making sure that students feel included, that they're a part of things. Our professors, we talk a lot about, you know, being there for each other. So, you know, one of the things that we mentioned was the Born This Way Foundation. One of the things that they do is they have a Be There certificate. And it's about being there for one another and recognizing when other people are having mental health challenges. So our professors are going to be a part of that program. They're going to be certified in it. We're going to ask our students to be a part of it, because life can be challenging. And we recognize, as we look at the mental health of our graduate students, of all of our students, it's important that we're there for each other and recognize when other people are going through challenges. When someone breaks their leg, we get up, we give them a seat. When someone is going through mental health challenges, we always aren't recognizing it, but it also requires that a person feels comfortable being authentic, but that you're also feeling comfortable with recognizing when their authenticity leads to places that could be really challenging for them. So I'm excited because University of Maryland Carey Law School has taken that on and sees it as a big part of what they do, and it's so critically important.
Well, can't wait to hear more about that. You've mentioned how much you have stayed connected to UMB. As you mentioned, chairwoman of the Board of Visitors for Maryland Carey Law. I've seen you at campus events here and there. So what's been the most rewarding part about giving back to the school, whether it's your time or initiatives you've worked on beyond the ones that you've mentioned already?
I am a strong believer that to whom much is given, much is expected. And I cannot tell you the amount of joy that I get in being there amongst the students. I remember what those days were like. And I think it's so important that we're there to have the discussions, to make the connections for them, to, you know, give them hope. I mentioned earlier, you know, going to the law school a couple of weeks ago and talking about the imposter syndrome and having students come to me with tears in their eyes, both males and females, both black and white, just the experiences that they've had. And I will tell you, that day I sat in my car, I had to pause because I thought, gosh, I'm so grateful. One, that they've heard about it at a much younger age than when I learned about it. But two, that they felt like they were comfortable enough coming to me and talking to me about it, because we just take so many things for granted, you know, whether or not it's, you know, people were talking about clerkships or law review, things like that we automatically take for granted. And the reality is they didn't grow up around the table with parents who were lawyers, and they weren't talking about this every day. And so getting the opportunity for them to hear about it, to understand career paths, I think just makes a huge difference. So I have gained much more than I could ever give in this role, for certain. And honestly, it's really a gift and a privilege to be a part of it.
Tamika, along with what you're saying, there are a number of, and thank you first and foremost for all that you have given back to UMB, but there are also a number of other ways that students and alumni could tap in at the university. Any thoughts on that?
There are many ways as alumni that we can give back, whether it's our time, talent, our treasure. So certainly from a time perspective, even if it's something very quickly, like a 15-minute tea on Zoom or, you know, coffee with a student, just to give them the exposure that they need. Or it's with your talent. We have such tremendous individuals at the University of Maryland Carey Law. So our illustrious dean, Renee Hutchins-Laurent, who leads our university and is doing an amazing job. We have have Shara Boonshaf, who's there, who is really focused on elevating the university. And then we even have an associate dean, Erica Smith, who focuses on student services and mental health and the wholeness of the individual. All of that is really significant. And as alumni, you can play a part, play a role in that. And of course, there's always opportunity to give of our treasure, whether it's something small, a cup of coffee, or whether it's something larger or something that you do collectively. I know our class of 1995 is looking for a way to actually have a student scholarship. So we're pooling our resources to be able to actually give a scholarship to a student. So, you know, there are many ways in which alumni can be helpful.
Great advice for all of the schools here at UMB too, not just the law school. Tamika, as we wrap up, where do you see your impact growing next? You've done so much, you're involved with so much now. What do the next 5 or 10 years look like for you?
Dana, that is a great question. And in my authentic way, I will say, I don't actually know. But what I do know right now is that I am really enjoying the journey that I am on. I am trying to be very present in each and every day. I am taking the time to be still, which I have never done in my entire life. So I am hoping that whatever else I continue to do, that it will be just an opportunity to build upon the things that I have been so privileged to receive to date. So I'm really excited about the next things, but also remembering to be really here in the present moment. But I would bet if I were to, you know, hypothesize that it'll be something global, that it'll be something involved with the community, a way in which I can really play to all of my strengths.
Well, it has certainly been a privilege for us talking to you, Tamika. You are definitely one of the shining lights of UMB and Maryland Carey Law. And it's been incredible hearing what you've been up to and what you're about to be up to soon. So definitely take time for yourself and your family during the holidays. And we hope you have a happy new year. And thank you for joining us on the UMB Pulse.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The UMB Pulse with Charles Shalade and Dana Rampola is a UMB Office of Communications and Public Affairs production. Edited by Charles Shalade, marketing by Dana Rampola.